most important of all, you're making these cards yourself. Back when we discussed learning simple vocabulary, I stressed the importance of making your own cards. I pointed out that the real learning occurs when you're playing Spot the Differences on Google Images, choosing a personal connection, and so on. The flashcards you create are just a tiny reminder of a much bigger experience. And while you could probably share your flashcards with friends and teach them a few simple words, this is a ball, this is a horse, you are the only person who can get the full benefits from your cards. Grammar is even more personal than vocabulary. You can't share any of your grammar cards with friends. These flashcards only mean anything because of the experience you had while creating them. You're starting with an example sentence from your grammar book and comparing that sentence to its translation. You're spending a few seconds looking at "I have a pet monkey" and searching for an accompanying image. In every step of this process, you're building connections between those words, "I have a pet monkey," in your mind. Your flashcard is just a way to reactivate and deepen those connections. You're picking an image or two, but the image you eventually choose barely matters. By the time that you decide upon one, you've already created the connections you need to remember your sentence forever. Remember when we talked about coupling an abstract image with the phrase "apples are delicious" back in Chapter 2? The main purpose of pictures is to help make your sentence more memorable. You may end up with some terrible clip art of a monkey paw print. No one else who sees that image on a flashcard would ever think, "Oh, monkey paw print, that must mean have, as in I have a pet monkey." But as long as you chose that image and designed your flashcard yourself, your sentence and the missing word in it will be memorable and clear. Every now and then, you may run into problems. Occasionally, your grammar book may include terribly vague example sentences, and a sentence like "blank is a good thing" just isn't going to do a good job of teaching you the meaning of a word like integrity, no matter how many flashcards you make. In cases like these, just skip those words. You'll learn them using the tools in the next chapter, when you start to find your own example sentences with Google Images and supplement them with a monolingual dictionary. New word forms. It's not always clear when you're looking at a new word and when you're looking at a new word form. Take the word "my," for instance. "My" isn't really a new word. It's just a different form of the word "I." Intuitively, you might not think this, but if I said to you, "I favorite monkey's name is George," you'd probably correct me with, no, "my favorite monkey's name is George." When you start learning your target language, you won't necessarily notice these sorts of connections, and if you don't, it's not a problem. You'll learn words like "my" as if they're new vocabulary words, in the same way we learned and "have" above. But suppose you did notice. Suppose you also noticed that is a special form of the verb to be. This is where you can learn your word forms. "My" is the word that fits into "blank name is George," with "I" in parentheses. And is a word that fits into "my name blank George," with "to be" in parentheses. The only difference between new words and new word forms is that here you'll give yourself an extra clue. You'll put that clue in parentheses, like "I" or "to be," after your sentence. This makes your flashcards somewhat easier to remember, and more importantly, links closely related concepts. Word order. You've learned all of your words. Now you just need to remember where to put them. This part's easy. On the front side of your flashcard, take your sentence and remove a word from it. "I, a pet monkey." Then put that word in parentheses under your sentence. Next, put it back into the sentence on the back side of that flashcard. Where does the word "have" go? Do this once or twice in a sentence, "I have a monkey," and then insert the word "pet," and you'll have the order of the words memorized for every similarly worded sentence. This process will look different in every language. You'll get a different mix of new words, word forms, and word orders, but the steps are identical. Here's the Italian version of our story. Mi chiamo George. Ho una scimmietta. Mi chiamo, I call, George. O, I have, una, a, but feminine, scimmietta, little monkey pet thing. The Italians convey just as much information in their 6 words as we convey in our 9. They do this by jamming a bunch of information into their word forms. Chiamo, I call, is a special form of the word chiamare, to call. O, I have, is a special form of avere, to have. To learn a pair of Italian sentences like these, you'd make a couple of flashcards for the new words, and perhaps for the word una, a. A giant pile of word form cards for all of those verbs, and a couple of word order cards. You might do this whole rigmarole for your first few sentences, but from then on, you'll have much less work to do. If you made flashcards for the word order of I have a pet monkey, you'd now know precisely where to put have and pet in a sentence. From now on, you could skip the word order cards in, for instance, she has a kid, or that pet monkey has a gun. This applies to new words and word forms as well. Anytime the position of a word, the form of a word, or the word itself surprises you, then learn it. But if you're not surprised by it, then skip it and move on to the next sentence. Find pictures. Pictures are there to make your life easier. They trick your brain into thinking about the story within each sentence rather than some abstract grammatical relationships. This makes every aspect of grammar more memorable and more useful. You don't need to know that the third person present indicative tense of to have is has, but you do need to know how to talk about George and his monkey, and you can trick yourself into training that skill by adding a picture of a monkey to your George blank a monkey to have flashcard. Unless you're using a Leitner box and drawing your pictures, you'll use Google Images. If you're not learning new concrete words, then you don't need to search for images in your target language. We're not playing spot the differences here. So if you need a picture of a man with a monkey, feel free to search for man with a monkey. This will save you some time and allow you to find practically any picture you can imagine. After all, the internet is mostly in English. There are 625 million men with monkeys out there, and only 1 million hommes avec singes. When you're picking apart a sentence into a bunch of little pieces, you can carefully search for the perfect picture of a man and monkey and reuse it in every flashcard. Or you can haphazardly pick up a handful of different pictures of men and monkeys. The former, using the same single image on every card, will probably take you less time. And the latter, different images on every card, will be easier to remember. Try both variants out and see how your brain reacts. I like to use multiple images to highlight different aspects of the sentence. For my George blank a pet monkey to have flashcard, I might have a picture of a monkey and a grabbing hand to emphasize the possessive nature of have. Experiment. You'll find that after a few weeks, you'll develop a sense for the sorts of images that work best for you. Note that not every sentence comes with an obvious picture. Honesty is the best policy. That doesn't contain any references to monkeys. In cases like these, find a picture of whatever comes to mind. You might grab an image of George Washington, or a hand swearing on a Bible, or Pinocchio. When all else fails, find a picture of anyone who would say your sentence. There are billions of images of people on the internet. Just search for man talking. Pick your favorite. Any picture will help turn an abstract grammatical idea into a concrete story. As a result, you'll have a much easier time remembering your sentence. Dealing with declension charts. Deal with declension charts, like I am, he, she, is, we are, etc., in the same way you dealt with example sentences. Turn them into the same kinds of picture flashcards we just talked about. The only real difference is that your grammar book won't supply you with every example sentence you need. So make those sentences yourself. Take an example sentence from your grammar book, I am a student, and turn it into a bunch of new sentences. She is an architect. He is a duck inspector. Whenever possible, make each sentence unique. It's relatively easy to keep track of I blank a student and she blank an architect, whereas 4 nearly identical flashcards for I blank a student, he blank a student, she blank a student, you blank a student, those can become really confusing. Once you've typed out your examples, submit them for corrections. You have 2 wonderful options here. lang-8.com, that's lang-8.com, and italki.com, italki.com. Lang 8 is free. Register on the site, write out your entry, and click the submit button. Within a day, you should get your corrections. Turn the corrected sentences into flashcards to learn the new words, new word forms, and word orders you encounter. If you correct someone's English entry every time you submit an entry of your own, your writing samples will consistently jump to the top of the correction pile, and you'll get your corrections sooner. If you want to get corrections even faster, search for native speakers of your target language who are learning English, and request to add them to your profile as friends. If they agree, they'll see and correct your submissions before anyone else's, and you'll see their submissions first, too. italki.com has free services, but for writing, those services are similar to Lang 8, and Lang 8 does a better job. Use italki for its wonderful paid services. Register on the site and start searching for a language teacher. You'll find both professional teachers, who are more expensive and better trained, and untrained tutors, or less expensive, untrained, but often really helpful. The site is designed for speaking lessons. You're basically paying for private tutoring sessions via video chat. But you can use it to find a teacher who will correct your writing and email it back to you. Contact a few teachers and see what kind of arrangement they'll make for writing corrections. By means of example, one of my website readers got seriously addicted to writing. He was writing out a full page of German every day. His tutor on italki corrects his writing for around $1 a page. Creating your own sentences. Writing is your proving ground. It's where you can play around with the words and grammar rules you've learned and see what you can create with them. We've discussed the importance of turning declension charts into memorable stories, but there's no reason to stop there. Write about your life, your interests, or anything else. Anytime you have a question, how do I say X? Can I do Y? Just write out a few sentences, submit them for corrections, and get your answers. If you have absolutely no idea how to write something, then use Google Translate, translate.google.com, to get yourself in the very rough ballpark. Then submit your sentences for corrections and see what the native speakers say. After you get your corrections, turn them into new word, word form, and word order flashcards. These are just variations of the same sentence game. At this point, you know how to play with a sentence, so there's nothing to prevent you from playing with lots of sentences. So go have fun. Once you've played your way through a few chapters of your grammar book, move on to the next chapter in this book, where you'll find a few more tools to add to your repertoire. For the intermediates. Learning grammar is an improvisatory dance at every level. As you encounter texts in your grammar book or elsewhere, you're constantly asking yourself the same question. Does this sentence contain something new? Do you know all the words? Have you seen those word forms before? Is the word order surprising? Use your flashcards to take whatever you find interesting. Your SRS will make sure that you never forget it. In the beginning of the next chapter, we'll discuss using Google Images to provide you with example sentences for any word and any grammatical construction. Since you have a bit of vocabulary and grammar already under your belt, you can start using that tool immediately. Listen to the Words About Words section in the next chapter and start using it to supplement your grammar book. It is an incredible tool. One note about writing. If you're trying to refresh a language you've forgotten, writing is one of the best ways to reactivate those old memories. Write as much as you possibly can, and turn all of the corrections you receive into flashcards. There is no better review for grammar and vocabulary. Chapter 6. The Language Game. It is a happy talent to know how to play. Ralph Waldo Emerson. By learning the sounds of your language, you gain access to words. By learning words, you gain access to grammar. And with just a little bit of grammar, you gain access to the rest of your language. This is the language game. It's the moment when a new language unfolds before your eyes and you can choose your own games to play and your own paths to follow. On some level, these paths are simple, even obvious. To improve your vocabulary, you need to learn vocabulary. To learn how to read, you need to read. And to learn how to speak, you need to speak. But there are better and worse ways to walk these paths. And so we're going to take a tour of the landscape. We'll walk through the process of customizing and learning vocabulary. We'll discuss how to approach your first books and your first TV shows. Finally, we'll talk about strategies for speaking and where to find native speakers. Wander this landscape in any way you choose. You may enjoy reading French magazines or watching Russian TV shows. You may fall in love with Chinese vocabulary, or you may fall in love with a new Italian friend. This is your language. Take it wherever you want to go. Setting goals, your custom vocabulary. If you don't know where you're going, you'll probably end up somewhere else. Yogi Berra. How many words should you learn? Which words should you learn? The answer depends upon you. What do you want to do with your language? Back in Chapter 4, we discussed using frequency lists to help streamline your vocabulary acquisition. I gave you a list of 625 basic words to learn and showed you how to learn them quickly. When you combine those words with a healthy dose of grammar from your textbook, you'll have everything you need to master the rest of your vocabulary. Begin with the top 1,000 words in your new language. There won't be many new words. You'll have learned most of them already from the 625 word list. And they'll let you understand nearly 85% of the words you hear and 75% of the words you read. Your next steps depend upon your individual needs. If you just want to chat in restaurants, those top 1,000 words may be enough. If you want to get a doctoral degree at the Sorbonne, then keep going. The second 1,000 words will give you a 5% boost to your reading and listening comprehension. You'll understand 90% of what you hear and 80% of what you read. On the surface, those 5% may seem like a relatively small payoff for 1,000 new words, but in practice, they make a significant difference. Instead of running into issues with every fourth word you read, you'll have pushed it back to every fifth word. At this point, you're doing pretty well, but you're not quite prepared for your doctorate yet. Your academic texts, for instance, will feel something like this. If current planting rates are blank, with planting blank satisfied in each blank, and the forest milled at the earliest opportunity, the blank wood supplies could further increase to about 36 million blank meters blank in the blank 2001 to 2015. The blank blank wood supply should greatly blank blank blank, even if much is used for blank production. With 2,000 words, you're at 80% comprehension. You can pick up the gist of a text. This paragraph is about wood supplies, but you're missing many of the important bits. To understand more, you can either learn a lot more words. 90% comprehension takes approximately 5,500 words, and 95% comprehension takes 12,500 words. Or you can start to specialize. Every field speaks its own language. Academics use different words than politicians, and musicians use different words than farmers. In our native languages, we've learned enough vocabulary, 15,000 to 35,000 words, to function in a wide variety of contexts. We can listen to political speeches, attend university lectures, and get our hair cut without much trouble. Occasionally we'll run into problems with an abstruse art critique or a baffling article on particle physics, but for the most part, our native vocabularies serve us in any environment. You don't necessarily need this capability in a new language. You may never attend a university lecture in French, or, on the other hand, you may use your French primarily in a university setting. Not everyone needs to learn the same words, and you can save a great deal of time by customizing your vocabulary to suit your needs. If you need to read academic texts, you could, for instance, learn a small collection of frequently used academic words like affect, confirm, and facilitate. Here's a new version of our wood supplies essay. In addition to the top 2,000 words, I've added just 570 academic words to our vocabulary. If current planting rates are maintained, with planting targets satisfied in each region, and the forest milled at the earliest opportunity, the available wood supplies could further increase to about 36 million blank meters blank in the period 2001 to 2015. The blank available wood supply should greatly exceed domestic requirements, even if much is used for energy production. Now you've reached 90% comprehension, and you can understand most of this text. You're missing the words cubic, annually, and additional. You'd need a 5,500 word vocabulary to reach this level of comprehension in every context. But here, in an academic context, you've accomplished the same result with half the work. Whether or not you're going into academia, you can take advantage of vocabulary customization to save you time. Start by learning the top 1,000 to 2,000 words to form a solid foundation, and then add key words based upon your interests. Where can you find these words? Get a thematic vocabulary book. The publisher Barron makes the best ones. And check off any words you want. These books give you lists of words based upon specific themes: home, business, automotive, and so on. If you're a musician, you can skip directly to the music section and pick out your favorite music vocabulary. Later, if you want to learn 30 words for pasta dishes, skip to the food section and pick out what you need from there. Choosing your vocabulary is one of the most enjoyable parts of learning a new language. It's like a personalized shopping trip for your brain. Key points. 1. To learn vocabulary efficiently, begin by learning the top 1,000 words in your target language. 2. If you're aiming for a high degree of fluency, then keep going until you know the top 1,500 to 2,000 words. 3. Once you're done building a foundation, choose additional words based upon your individual needs. You can find these words by skimming through a thematic vocabulary book and finding keywords for every context you need: travel, music, business, and so on. Words about words.
Un dictionnaire, c'est tout l'univers par ordre alphabétique.
A dictionary, the entire universe in alphabetical order.
Anatole France.
In the last chapter, we talked about learning new grammatical constructions and complex words with the help of example sentences from your grammar book. You can take these sentences, turn them into fill-in-the-blank exercises, add a few pictures, and learn a bunch of new words and word forms. The word where, for instance, might go with, blank, are you going? Well, I'm going to France. This strategy can teach you the words in your grammar book. But what about the rest of your vocabulary, that list of words we discussed in the last section? You need a way to find quality examples and explanations for every new word, and it wouldn't hurt if you learned some grammar at the same time. We're going to use 3 tools: Google Images, self-directed writing, and monolingual dictionaries. We've already encountered the first two, and with some grammar and vocabulary under your belt, you can use them to their full potential. The last tool, a dictionary in your target language, will soon become one of your best friends. It will let you learn any word in your target language, no matter how complex. First, let's reintroduce ourselves to Google Images. Google Images, the sequel. We talked about in Chapter 4 how to use Google Images to find helpful images for your words and to play the Spot the Differences game. But with the help of some grammar, you can use Google Images in a different way. Suppose you needed to learn the French word dernier, last. If you're using Google Images inside of Google Translate, then a quick search for dernier on Google Images provides you with this little illustrated story. The last Argentine dictator sentenced to life imprisonment, with a picture of a kind of scary-looking guy. If you move your mouse over that text, you'll get the original French headline: Le dernier dictateur argentin condamné à la prison à perpétuité. Suddenly, you're not just learning one word. You're picking up the words for Argentine, argentin, dictator, dictateur, and sentenced, condamné. You're learning the phrase for life imprisonment, prison à perpétuité, and you're getting bits and pieces of grammar all over the place. This is a language goldmine, and it will take you seconds to learn. What's dernier mean? That's the word that fits into this story: le blanc dictateur argentin condamné à la prison à perpétuité. Granted, dernier isn't the only word that could fit into our story. Perhaps Argentina's first or 17th dictator also went to prison. Nonetheless, you'll still remember dernier, last, every time you see this story and its accompanying picture. After all, that story is just a reminder of a much richer experience: searching for dernier, skimming through 19 other illustrated stories, Justin Bieber at his dernier concert, Arnold Schwarzenegger's The Dernier Stand, and finally, choosing that Argentinian dictator. All of these experiences link together in your memory, and your flashcard becomes merely a reminder that brings those memories back. Google Images can also produce illustrated examples for any grammatical construction. Need a good story for French's avait fait, he, she, it had done? Just search for avait fait, and you'll find 1.6 million different examples of that specific construction, complete with images and translations. Self-directed writing. Google Images is a wonderful and fast way to find good example sentences for your words. But if you want to learn a heap of grammar at the same time, write out your own examples and definitions. After you get your corrections, you can use the example sentences to teach you your words and use the corrections to teach you your grammar. This is a tremendously efficient use of your time. Not only are you learning vocabulary and grammar simultaneously, but you're also creating particularly memorable examples for your words. These aren't just stories you've read somewhere, they're your stories, and accordingly, they'll stay in your head. You can also write anywhere, provided you have a translated list of words to learn and a small notepad or smartphone. You'll probably make mistakes. Hungarian has two words for red. Did you use the right one? But every time you do, a native speaker will catch it, and you'll learn even more from the experience. I like to write whenever I'm stuck on a long commute. I'll finish my daily flashcard reviews and then begin writing example sentences and definitions for new words. It's an endless source of portable entertainment. Monolingual dictionaries. A good monolingual dictionary is an extraordinary source of input. Inside, you'll find every word you could possibly desire, paired with a complete explanation of that word in your target language. And if you don't understand some words in that explanation, you can just look them up and find new explanations of those words. Every time you read a new definition, you automatically learn a few new words and a bunch of grammar. It's like having a French guy in your pocket who's willing to discuss any word in his language at any hour of the day. If you get a really good dictionary, then you'll even find pre-made example sentences for your words. If you're lucky enough to find a dictionary like this, you're holding a one-stop shop for all of your vocabulary needs. Take those examples and definitions, grab a few accompanying images from Google Images, and move on to your next word. At intermediate and advanced levels, you'll start relying more and more upon monolingual dictionaries, in part because they're awesome, and in part because they'll show you the subtle distinctions between your words. A couple chapters back, we were avoiding synonyms. But now, we can embrace them, because we can use dictionaries to tell us the differences between our policemen, which are formal, and our cops, which are informal. Up until this point, I've recommended using example sentences to learn abstract words, but that has limits. Sometimes it's hard to find a good example sentence to help you remember an abstract word like determination. In the last chapter, I suggested that you skip any tricky words and learn them later. But now, with the help of a monolingual dictionary, there's nothing you can't learn. Even with access to definitions, don't stop using example sentences. They make your words easier to remember, and they show you how to use your words fluently. A dictionary adds an additional layer of depth and helps you figure out the differences between words like eat and devour. Using a dictionary may take a little bit longer than you're accustomed to. Before, you could grab a picture of a cat and make a flashcard in a few seconds. Now, you'll search for pictures, good example sentences, and definitions. But for every word you learn in this way, you get a bunch of new words added to your passive vocabulary and a great deal of comprehensible input. This reinforces every part of your language and dramatically accelerates your learning. And if you use an online dictionary, you won't need much more time at all. You can search for a new word, copy the information, and add it to your flashcards in less than a minute. Key points. 1. Use Google Images to find quality example sentences and pictures for your words. It's fast, it provides clear examples, and the combination of images and sentences is easy to memorize. 2. If you run into problems or you're away from your computer, write out your own example sentences and definitions for new words. Get them corrected and use those corrections to learn both grammar and vocabulary. 3. Once you have enough vocabulary under your belt, add a monolingual dictionary to your toolbox. When you do, you'll gain the ability to learn every word in your target language, and as a bonus, your passive vocabulary will grow every time you research and memorize a new term. Reading for pleasure and profit. The more that you read, the more things you will know. The more that you learn, the more places you'll go. Dr. Seuss, I can read with my eyes shut. We have huge vocabularies in our native languages. Words can be hard to count. Is jump different from jumping? But if we're counting word families, e.g. the jump family includes jumped and jumping, Then we know 15,000 to 35,000 of these families by our 20th birthdays. How on earth did we learn so many words? Most of us didn't spend our teenage years leafing through dictionaries, and most of the words we know are rarely, if ever, spoken aloud. When's the last time you said excavate? There's only one feasible source left. As it turns out, we learn the vast majority of our words through reading, and we can do the same in a foreign language. Reading in a foreign language often evokes some ugly associations. Hours spent trudging through some excruciatingly long masterpiece of literature, painstakingly looking up every other word in a dictionary. But we don't need to torture ourselves. We possess an extraordinary ability to learn words from context alone, without the aid of a dictionary. This is how we learn most of our English words, after all. That part of our brain doesn't simply shut down as soon as it encounters a word en français. Practically speaking, we'll automatically learn an unknown word 10% of the time we encounter it. Sometimes we'll catch it the first time we see it. The dogs, Farouk, wagged excitedly. And sometimes we'll pick up a word more gradually. If a character in our book chugs a single doboz of beer, then we can be pretty sure doboz is some sort of can or bottle. If he later crushes that doboz in his hands and throws it in the recycling bin, it's probably not made of glass. You can take advantage of this ability by reading as much as you can as quickly as possible. Every novel-length book you read, whether it's Tolstoy or Twilight, will automatically increase your vocabulary by 300 to 500 new words and dump buckets of grammar into that language machine in your head. As such, you don't need to start with hardcore literature. You can just read whatever's most fun. The Harry Potter series has been translated into a bajillion languages, or at least 67, and you can find trashy romance novels or detective stories in every language. Choose whatever you find most appealing. For your very first book, try to find a familiar story, a translation of something you've already read, or a book that's been turned into a movie you've seen, and read that book along with an audiobook. The audiobook will carry you along and help you read faster than you otherwise would. You won't have the time to get bogged down with unknown words, and you'll pick up the rhythm of the spoken language. In the previous chapters of this book, I've directed your attention towards the pronunciation of individual words, but I haven't talked much about the sound of sentences. Even familiar words can sound different in the context of rapid speech, and audiobooks are the easiest way to familiarize yourself with real spoken language. You're listening to a native speaker talk for 12 to 18 hours in a row, and you have the words right in front of you, and you have a good story to concentrate on. It's perfect. Along the way, you'll get a ton of comprehensible input, pick up a bunch of vocabulary, and have fun in the process. You also get an opportunity to focus on a story, rather than painstakingly decoding the precise meaning of every word in every sentence. It's not always important to know whether a wizard's wand is made of yew or alder. Sometimes you just need to know what that wizard did. This is yet another skill that will serve you in the future. You need the ability to skip over holes in your vocabulary. You're not going to know the precise meaning of every word you encounter, but that doesn't necessarily prevent you from understanding a story or a conversation. By reading books, you can learn to let go of the words you don't understand and get yourself swept up in the magic of a good story. Key points. 1. Reading without a dictionary is the simplest, easiest way to grow your passive vocabulary. On average, a single book will teach you 300 to 500 words from context alone. By reading just one book in your target language, you'll make all future books and texts of any kind much easier to read. 2. By reading in conjunction with an audiobook, you'll have a much easier time moving through a long text, and you'll pick up invaluable exposure to the rhythms of your language in action. This will improve your pronunciation, your listening comprehension, your vocabulary, your grammar. In short, it will provide a huge boost to every aspect of your language. Listening comprehension for couch potatoes. If you want to use television to teach somebody, you must first teach them how to use television. Umberto Eco. Learning to listen can be tricky. Out in the real world, speech can come fast, and even familiar vocabulary can sound foreign in someone else's mouth. You may learn to comfortably read and write, and even begin thinking in a language, when suddenly you run into a real-life French teenager and realize that you don't understand a word she's saying. Whole fragments of sentences, je ne suis pas, I am not, turn into single mumbled words, suis pas, and you're left scratching your head, wondering if she's actually speaking French. And this is before you even begin to worry about regional accents and dialects. When I moved to Austria, I arrived with an official German fluency certificate. I strutted my way to the farmer's market, bought a basil plant, and asked the farmer how to care for it. He replied in Austrian German. After 5 minutes of smiling and nodding, I picked up one word. Water. Apparently I needed to do something with water to keep my basil plant alive. If you want to understand real-world speech, you need to listen to real-world speech. But you can't just start by listening to foreign news radio all day. It's just too hard. You'll get frustrated and you'll tune out, at which point you might as well be listening to random noise. You could listen to music, which might be a bit more engaging, but music isn't great either. How often do you pay serious attention to the lyrics of a song? How often do you even understand the lyrics of a song? Music carries us away, and when the drums are beating and the guitars are playing, we will happily sing Slow Motion Walter, Fire Engine Guy, regardless of the real lyrics, Smoke on the Water, Fire in the Sky. We don't always listen to music for the stories. We listen for the music. So if you want to listen to French music, go ahead. It might get a few new words banging around in your head, but it's not going to prepare you for that mumbling French teenager. Instead, watch movies and television. In those genres, you are listening for the stories, and so you'll pay very careful attention to everything you hear. Unlike news radio, you can see the facial expressions and body language of every speaker, and you can see precisely what they're doing while they speak. These visual clues can help you understand what you're hearing. TV and film are just like real life, only a bit more story-driven. They're perfect for learning how to listen. DVDs of movies and TV shows often come with subtitles in English or in your target language. Don't use them. The problem with subtitles is that reading is easier than listening. We learn with our eyes more than our ears, and so when subtitles are present, we don't improve at listening. A film with English subtitles is basically an English storybook with some foreign language background noise. It's useless for our needs. Sure, you might hear a couple of hours of French or Spanish, but you aren't actually listening to the dialogues. You're just reading the story. If the subtitles are in your target language, then you're still just reading a story. Although this story is significantly more useful, this can be a wonderful source of input. It's not much different than reading a book with an audiobook. But it won't help you with that damned mumbly teenager. You need to put yourself in a situation where you're relying entirely on your ears. And subtitles take that away from you. Still, you'll probably need some help. With subtitles, you won't train your ears, but without them, movies and TV shows can feel overwhelming. You can dial back the difficulty in two ways. By choosing your first shows very carefully, and by reading about those shows ahead of time, on Wikipedia. First things first, TV series are easier than films. When you watch anything, your first hardest task is to figure out who's who and what's going on. This task is equally difficult in TV and film, but in a TV series, you only have to do it once. By the second or third episode, you basically understand what's happening and you can sit back and enjoy yourself. In a film, you may never understand what's going on, which is extraordinarily frustrating. It feels like you just threw away 2 hours of your life, and you didn't even have fun doing it. So start with a TV series. At least after the first couple of episodes, you'll have a much easier time. Which TV series should you watch? Choose whatever you like, as long as it's not comedy. There is nothing quite as terrible as listening to a long German joke, reaching the end and realizing that you don't understand the punchline because it's a crappy pun on some rare word that only exists in some ridiculous German dialect. Don't do this to yourself. Watch House, or 24, or Some Guy Runs Around and Shoots People. In all likelihood, these shows have been professionally dubbed into your target language. You can follow along without too much trouble. Oh, what's he doing? Oh, he's shooting someone again. You'll pay attention, and you won't throw your TV set out the window after a terrible German joke. If you choose your show carefully, you can get yourself seriously addicted to foreign language TV. This is the best case scenario. I got through 48 episodes of 24 heures chrono, the French dub of 24, in a 2-week TV binge, and it did wonders for my French. Don't worry about the dubbing. Today's high-budget TV shows have come a long way from the lip-flapping kung fu dubs of the past. They had to. American TV is played around the world, and no one wants to watch a terrible dub of their favorite series. As such, they hire translators who pay close attention to both the words and timing of the English originals, so you barely even notice that everyone's lips are slightly off. Still, if it bothers you, feel free to find a TV series originally made in your target language. But don't be surprised if all the fun, mindless violence of American TV is replaced by drama, or worse, comedy. Blech. You'll have a much easier time understanding a TV show or a movie if you read a summary of it first, particularly if that summary is in your target language. This trick got me through the first couple of seasons of Lost in Russian. Go to Wikipedia in English, look up your TV show, and then switch to your target language. You'll find that link on the bottom left side of the page. There, you'll usually find information about your show and summaries of the episodes. When you read one of these summaries, you pick up a bunch of the vocabulary used in each episode. This strategy can also help you handle films, since you can introduce yourself to the characters and plot ahead of time. It feels like reading a short book and then watching the movie adaptation of that book, which definitely beats staring at a movie screen and only figuring out the plot after the movie is over. Later, once you're comfortable watching TV, you can begin to drop your crutches. You won't need to read summaries on Wikipedia, and you'll be able to handle films without much trouble. If you're really adventurous, you might even be able to handle comedy, but don't bother if you're learning German. Then, if you want, you can make the step to audiobooks, without a book in hand, podcasts, and radio. Key points. 1. Listening is a fast-paced skill that can sometimes feel overwhelming. Take baby steps, and gradually ramp up the challenge until you can handle the fastest and hardest of listening challenges, like radio, podcasts, and ridiculous garbled train station announcements. 2. Start with an interesting foreign TV or dubbed American TV series without subtitles. You can dial down the difficulty by reading episode summaries ahead of time in order to prepare yourself for the vocabulary and plot twists of every episode. 3. As your comfort level grows, wean yourself off of summaries and begin watching and listening to more challenging media. Speech and the Game of Taboo. "I can't do this," I said. "I don't know what to say." "Say anything," he said. "You can't make a mistake when you improvise." "What if I mess it up? What if I screw up the rhythm?" "You can't," he said. "It's like drumming. If you miss a beat, you create another." Patti Smith, Just Kids. There is a party game called Taboo. Perhaps you've played it. In Taboo, you try to make your teammates say a certain word. Baseball, for instance, out loud. However, you're not allowed to say baseball, nor can you say sport, game, hitter, pitcher, or ball. Those words are forbidden, they're taboo, and in order to win, you have to find a path around the forbidden words. You improvise. You talk about an event where players get together, hit spheres with bats, and run around on a diamond. If all goes well, your team shouts out baseball, and you win a point. If not, then you find other routes. It's America's favorite pastime. It's what the Dodgers do, and so on. Fluent speech and the game of taboo are practically the same thing. When you speak in a foreign language, you try to communicate the thoughts in your head, but you don't always have the right words to express them. You want to tell your German friend about a baseball game, but you don't know the word for baseball. Perhaps you don't even know the German words for sport or game. How do you communicate your thoughts to your friend? Your first tendency will be to switch to English. Your friend probably understands English, and you'll get your point across. Unfortunately, your German won't get any better. If, on the other hand, you stay in German, a remarkable thing occurs. You begin to improvise. At that moment, you take a giant leap toward fluency. Fluency, after all, isn't the ability to know every word and grammatical pattern in a language. It's the ability to communicate your thoughts without stopping every time you run into a problem. If you can successfully tell your friend about that baseball game, we were watching the Dodgers, then you've just practiced fluency. You've gotten better at using the words you know to express yourself. If you can do this for every thought in your head, then you're done. You've won the language game. You're fluent. This is a learned skill, and it's a skill you can practice using a simplified version of taboo. There is only one rule. No English allowed. Every time you speak with a native speaker or another language learner, you'll stick to your target language exclusively. At some point, a thought will arrive in your head and you won't have the words to express it, and that's the moment that matters most. Seize it. It's the opportunity to turn your memorized vocabulary and grammar into fluent spoken language, and you only get it when you stubbornly refuse to speak in English. This is the most important game in this book. Everything we've done until now has been designed to help you reach this final game. So don't let anyone take it from you. You're going to run into people who have no interest in playing taboo. They might be fellow language learners who switch to English whenever they run into problems, or native speakers who want to use you to practice their English. They will, sometimes unconsciously, encourage you to speak in English. Don't do it. Find other people to hang out with. Your language will thank you. Finding fellow taboo players. The world is full of people who speak the language you're learning. You can find them at home, abroad, or somewhere in between. At home. Video chats in your living room. 5 to 10 years ago, your only local options for speech practice involved classes or local tutors. Then high-speed internet came and changed everything. You can load up a website, click a few buttons, and video chat with a native speaker in the comfort of your own home. It's a brave new world. The internet's offerings change all the time, but there are a couple of communities that stand out and deserve mention. LiveMocha and iTalki. LiveMocha.com, LiveMocha.com, is one of many language exchange websites. Other notables are busuu.com, B-U-S-U-U, mylanguageexchange.com, and language-exchanges.org. They resemble dating websites for language learners. You put up a profile. I'm an English-speaking tax attorney seeking a like-minded Russian speaker for video chatting. Search through other users' profiles and try to make friends. Once you find a few interesting people, you set up video chat dates, usually via Skype, where you chat and alternate languages until you decide to stop. If you find a few dedicated language learners on LiveMocha and set up regular chat dates, you can get a lot of speaking practice. The real challenge is figuring out what to talk about once you've made your introductions. At that point, you'll either need to find mutual interest to talk about or shift into party games, e.g. YouRather.com. Would you rather always be naked or always be itchy? iTalki.com, iTalki.com, brings money to the table, which changes the game dramatically. It can connect you with native speakers and professional teachers who are willing to chat with you exclusively in your target language. This cuts the English out of your practice sessions and makes them much more efficient. Since these teachers get to work in the comfort of their own homes, they usually charge very little. This arrangement gives you a lot more control over your learning. Once you've tried out a few people and found a good match, most teachers offer cheap 30-minute intro sessions. You can schedule regular meetings and plan out conversation topics in advance. If you're aiming for efficiency, then pull out a word frequency list and discuss every word you don't know in order. This is what I do with my private English students, and it always provokes interesting, fun conversations. When we try to suss out the difference between a bar and a pub, for instance, we invariably get caught up in long discussions about German and American drinking cultures. In the end, we've managed to chatter for 5 to 10 minutes, play countless games of taboo, and definitively learn the difference between a bar, a pub, and a Biergarten. Then we move on to the next word and have a totally new conversation. Take notes on everything you learn. This is your chance to pick up all the slang that's missing from your textbook. If you want, you can even work with your tutor to generate example sentences for new flashcards. In the process, you'll run into new grammar and new vocabulary, all while speaking in your target language. It is a great use of time and money, and it's one of the best ways to practice speaking at home. Abroad, language holidays. You can learn a language at home, but there's no substitute for travel. When you travel to a country, you learn something about the soul of a language, its people, its food, its culture, that can't be captured in books. I learned Italian in Perugia, Italy. I lived with a man from Naples who once sat me down and explained the difference between ordinary pizza and real Neapolitan pizza. His monologue was a 10-minute rhapsody on pizza, after which he began to run out of words and simply gestured wildly while saying, "È come un orgasmo." It's like an orgasm. I learned some Italian that day, but that wasn't really the point. I learned about the Italian soul. If you want to add some structure to your language holiday, consider enrolling in classes. There are language institutes in almost every country, many of which are surprisingly affordable. The experience you get in return is invaluable. You learn 1,000 things you would never have otherwise learned. Etiquette at the Viennese Opera House, the strange workings of the national healthcare system, the taste of real Neapolitan pizza. And in the process, you fall in love with a people and a culture. Be aware that most people speak English, so try to find the people that prefer to speak in your target language. Even if you're taking classes with an international group of students, you'll find that most students speak English in the breaks. And if you speak English natively, people will actively seek you out to practice their English skills. This makes our game of taboo much more difficult. So if you're on a language holiday in a foreign country, arrange activities that put you in contact with locals. Go on museum tours in Italian. Take cooking classes in French. Go to bars, local religious services, or community events. Create an environment in which you can speak your target language as much as possible. There is nothing wrong with speaking English with Italians, but this is your money and your time abroad. Seek out people who hate speaking English and hang out with them instead. Or just tell everyone you're Albanian and you don't speak English. No one speaks Albanian. In between, immersion programs. I'm a big fan of immersion programs, particularly those offered at Middlebury College in Vermont. You show up at a secluded university with a group of 40 to 200 people. You all sign a contract forbidding the use of English, and you speak exclusively in your target language for 7 to 8 weeks. It's language learning boot camp, and the game of taboo is the law of the land. You study in your target language, eat in your target language, and after a few weeks, you even dream in your target language. These programs are wonderful because everyone is working toward the same goal. As a result, you feel much less inhibited when you speak. It can be embarrassing or scary when you're the only non-native speaker in a room. This happens a lot when you're studying abroad. In an immersion program, everyone is making mistakes, so it's not that big a deal if you make some as well. You spend most of your days taking classes, chatting with friends, helping less experienced students, and learning from more experienced students. There's a slight downside to spending so much time with students. You can pick up bad habits, particularly when it comes to pronunciation. Even if you arrive with an excellent accent, you may start sounding a little American if you spend most of your time listening to American-accented German. Still, there is no way to beat the amount of speaking practice you get in one of these programs. You're playing taboo constantly. And you can minimize any damage to your accent by spending time with the native speaker teachers and by watching foreign language TV when you need a break from socializing. These programs can be expensive, but they offer plentiful grant-based financial aid, and their results are beyond compare. If you have the opportunity to go, jump on it. You'll never forget it. Key points. 1. With the advent of ubiquitous high-speed internet connections, you can get quality speech practice anywhere. 2. Whenever and wherever you practice, follow the golden rule of language taboo. No English allowed. By practicing in this way, you'll develop comfortable fluency with the words and grammar you know. Do this now. Explore your language. Go explore. Read one book or 20. Write a novel. Jump on a plane to an intensive program abroad. You have the tools you need to turn your language into whatever you desire, and you can use them in any way and in any order you choose. That being said, it can be nice to have some suggestions about what to do first and what to do next. I'm happy to oblige. Over the previous three chapters, I've suggested the following. 1. Sound play. Learn how to hear and produce the sounds of your target language and how spelling and sound interrelate. 2. Word play. Learn 625 frequent concrete words by playing Spot the Differences in Google Images, finding personal connections, and if needed, adding mnemonic imagery for grammatical gender. 3. Sentence play. Begin turning the sentences in your grammar book into flashcards for new words, word forms, and word order. Use written output to fill in the gaps missing from your textbook. Now here's what I suggest you do next. 1. If you haven't already done so, learn the first half of your grammar book. Make flashcards for everything you find interesting. 2. Learn the top 1,000 words in your target language. Write out definitions and examples whenever you're not entirely sure what a word means. About halfway through, you'll find that you can understand a monolingual dictionary. Use it to help you learn the rest of your words. 3. Go back to your grammar book, skim through it, and grab any remaining bits of information you'd like. 4. Read your first book while listening to an audiobook. 5. Watch a full season of a dubbed TV show, reading episode summaries in your target language ahead of time. 6. Get a ton of speech practice. Get as much as you possibly can, either through an immersion program, a language holiday abroad, or through teachers on italki.com. If you get a private teacher, talk about the next 1,000 words from your frequency list and add specialized words for your particular interests. Together with your teacher, create example sentences and enter them into your SRS. Then rinse and repeat as desired. A note. Even when you're focusing on a book or TV show, never stop doing flashcard reviews. Your flashcards get more and more useful the longer you use them. I like to review my flashcards for a full year before I stop completely. That way, I'll have an easier time retaining all my words and grammar, even without doing any maintenance later. Also, never entirely stop creating and learning new cards. In the past, I've run into situations where I wanted to maintain one of my languages without learning anything new. I did my daily reviews, but I stopped learning new flashcards. It got boring fast. At least in my experience, flashcard reviews are only really fun when you're learning new things at the same time. So make sure you always have something new to learn. Even just a couple of new words a day makes a huge difference. Resources. 1. Frequency lists and dictionaries. We'll discuss frequency list recommendations in Appendix 1, but you can also check my website, fluent-forever.com/language-resources, for reviews and suggestions. When all else fails, you can find acceptable quality frequency lists for most languages on Wikipedia. We'll also discuss dictionary recommendations in Appendix 1, and you'll also find those on my website. If you can find an online monolingual dictionary, stick it into Google Translate at translate.google.com. This will give you the ability to use a dictionary very early in your learning process. 2. Books. The world of books is gigantic. By the time you're ready to read a book, you'll also be ready to search the internet in your target language and find booksellers who will happily ship you copies of your desired book and its audiobook. From personal experience, I can highly recommend the Harry Potter series. The translations are great, and there are lots of audiobook versions. Whenever possible, I've linked to booksellers on my website. 3. Film and TV. Film and TV can be a bit tricky to find, in part because the big media companies have reacted poorly to the internet and tried to lock down their intellectual property in inconvenient ways. As such, you may need a special DVD player to play DVDs from a different country. And if you want to rent foreign films or TV episodes from an iTunes store in another country, you need to either get access to a foreign credit card or buy a foreign iTunes gift card off of eBay, This can be aggravating when all you want to do is buy and watch a TV show. However, producers and TV stations are starting to wise up. You can frequently find foreign language DVDs on Netflix, and you can even occasionally find legal streams of your favorite dubbed TV shows on the